This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
So let's get started. Does that sound good, you guys?
Yeah.
All right. So this for the five of you guys, we say Paizo is all about getting access to the staff, and boy, have you guys got it right now. This is.
Oh, your access just got reduced.
Yeah.
Yes. By all means, stay as far back as you guys can.
It's contagious out here.
So what we'd like to do for the next like hour or so is to talk a little bit about some of the Pathfinder and Starfinder stuff that we're working on, but that is not actually produced by us, but that is produced by some of our licensing partners. And I'm Eric Mona. I am the publisher and chief creative officer of the company. I am joined by an illustrious panel of experts on this subject.
Where?
If you look to the side and it's not you or the guy next to you, I guess I'm just being polite.
Okay.
So I'll let you guys introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about what you do.
I'm Mark Moreland. I am Paizo's franchise manager. So I work closely with a lot of our licensees as well as internally, just to make sure that we're consistent with both the Pathfinder and Starfinder brands from a continuity and tone and artistic standpoint. So I'm sort of the liaison between creative staff and some of our outside partners.
I'm Glenn Elliott. I'm the licensing manager, and while Mark does all the cool fun stuff with all of our properties, I do the gritty back-end stuff to make sure that it all happens with our partners. I tend to work directly with them, getting them the art assets they needed and getting them the approvals that they need, which actually come from Mark. I just coordinate it. But yeah, I
kind of
do the back-end stuff.
Clean.
You
do contracts, and you're dealing with more of the financial and legal aspects of it than I do. So,
we also have regular meetings on a weekly basis with other executives and other creative directors of the company to kind of chart the future for some of these projects. There are basically a couple of different kinds of licensed products that we do. There are things that are like campaign coins or, miniatures or things that are adaptations, basically, or like physical objects that are created based off of our stuff. But then there are other things like the Dynamite comic books or the Big Finish audios or the Owlcats Kingmaker video game that involve significant amounts of storytelling and continuity and lore and things like that. And so the whole team works on all that stuff. But where we really get into the nitty-gritty is on some of the stuff that is not just sort of making a physical object of a piece of art, but is actually telling a new story. And Mark has been invaluable in, Mark knows the Pathfinder world better than anybody. He has been spearheading the Pathfinder Wiki project since the beginning. He was actually hired originally to do essentially the job he's doing now, or more.
It only took me 7 years to get
editorial version of the job, and I'm absolutely thrilled. He's been a delight, and same with Glenn. Glenn has really helped us move through the day-to-day processes on some of this stuff so that things don't linger. There's a danger when you're a small company and you have outside partners that the outside stuff always kind of takes second chair to the in-house stuff because you just have only so many resources. So being able to, in addition to myself and some of our creative team, having these guys working, honestly, on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis, I think, Mark, it seems to me like you're much busier than you have been in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thrilled with the
which is, yeah,
in.
Different. I thought that since I was no longer working on producing books that I wouldn't have deadlines. Oh, foolish me.
One of the really fun things about where we're at right now with second edition Pathfinder is we're kind of getting a chance to not so much start over, but codify things correctly for the first time. So our art director, creative director, who's in charge of our art, Sarah Robinson, has been working with Wayne Reynolds on doing style guide stuff. So we've always had a style guide. It's mostly been, here's the iconic characters. We have illustrations of each of their individual pieces of gear. But we're getting much, much more elaborate with the second edition. So we've got, it's got to be over 100 pages now of different characters. And here's what a male dwarf looks like and a female dwarf looks like. And here's what dwarven equipment looks like. And here's what elven weapons look like. So we've got a lot of that stuff visually figured out. That gives us two advantages. One is that our own books look internally consistent, and I've always wanted it, like, if it's going to be an elven weapon, you should be able to look at it and go, oh, that looks elven, in the same way that if you play, like, Warhammer 40K, you can look at a miniature and go, oh, that's a plasma rifle, or that's a las rifle, or whatever. There's a visual language that we're dealing with, and so we're doing some of that with Pathfinder as well, and then that makes it much, much easier for our partners like WizKids or Ninja Division to make really, really good miniatures. Miniatures have been a real passion project for me since the very beginning. I was, before I had guys like this, I was the one, you know, making all the set lists, and I'm a big miniatures collector. I run the miniatures trading after party here on Monday in the bar at 2 or 3 o'clock, and so I'm big into it, but it's really been awesome for me to be able to pull back from that a little bit while we're launching second edition and have Mark and Glenn so ably pick up the pieces. Some of the work we're getting out of our miniatures partners now, I think, in part because of innovations on their side and things like that, I think that they're absolutely staggering quality of stuff that we're getting from them. And a lot of that's because we continue to learn on our end of, like, what kind of images are going to work for miniatures, what are going to pose challenges. I think we've all been learning a lot about mold making and things like that. You know, and interestingly enough, like a secret that I learned fairly early on is more paint steps on a painted miniature does not necessarily a better miniature make. Sometimes it's just more opportunities for a factory to mess it up or just to not match the quality of the master painter. So,
or to artificially inflate a figure's rarity.
Right.
That if you want a whole bunch of goblins, you can't expect each of those goblins to have a ton of extra detail. Exactly.
And
yeah.
Things written on their arms.
Because then they end up being rare, and then you don't end up with a mob of them. You have one.
So, Glenn, how would you like to proceed in terms of going through some of the different projects? I mean, we can just continue meandering through it. You've got some presentation slides just to look at and show off stuff. Is there something you'd like to...
Yeah, no, I just brought some slides, and these are just, I think there's 6 slides.
There's not too many.
Just some of the things that we have that, in some cases, haven't been announced yet.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anything in this presentation has been announced.
Well, Kingmaker.
I think most of our licensees are covered by this, and we can use this as a starting point and then go from there, I think.
Shall we look at the first slide, Glenn?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So this, what are we looking at here?
This is something that we're working on with Campaign Coins. We came up with the idea to do something... The original idea was actually to have it here for PaizoCon, but it turned out to be more complex than that. But we're thinking about doing a commemorative coin of some sort every year for the convention season. And the first one that came up, they wanted to use Corvosan crown. So that's Queen Iliosa, and that's the Crown of Thorns. And this
crown of Fangs.
Crown of Fangs, sorry, yeah.
Crown of Jesus.
he's the continuity editor. I'm just the back-end guy.
Like
he keeps me going.
I am very quick to correct Glenn.
Absolutely. Daily, and
just
it's necessary.
Enough, right? Just
well, I'm the only one
that's actually, Eric.
anyway, so this is just a representation of a coin that, you know, could be from the Pathfinder universe. It's not technically canon because there was nothing ever in the universe that said that Queen Iliosa made coins in her own image, but they certainly could have been made.
But she would. I mean,
and she certainly would.
Yeah, I mean, and that was sort of our, from a creative standpoint, when Campaign Coins suggested this to us, this was actually them coming to us and saying, hey, we want to make a coin to do at conventions, and we'll break the mold. It'll only be available there. And we were like, awesome. As long as I get one, then that's cool. And So we thought about what we wanted it to be. We thought, do we want it to be like the Paizo Golem, or do we want it to be something that's useful, you know, from an in-world standpoint? And I think we were universally on the same page about, well, let's make it a coin that someone actually could have in their coin purse in Galarian.
Yeah, and so these will be produced similar to the campaign coins, standard coins.
Yep.
I'm very excited about the prospect that we continue along this stretch. You know, 5-6 years from now, we'll have a whole handful of different,
yeah,
you know, coinage from these fake countries that I made up.
What you're looking at here on the screen is just one of the many steps that we go through. So this is just one of the sketches that they've provided to us. This is actually the third or fourth iteration that it went through to get to this point.
At least, yeah.
And there will be more iterations to come. And then eventually what they do is they actually make a sculpture of the coin. And from that sculpture, they make the molds that are then used to actually mint them. But this is just one stage along the way, and
I think this one's pretty final. I think
it's pretty close.
Is the date from the date the coin was minted? It has no relationship to.
So this specific one, the date for those listening or those who can't see it is 4708 AR, which in our world continuity coincides with 2008, not with 2018, and so. But that's the
year, also is the year that this came out.
That's the year canonically that Iliosa took over Corvosa. That's when Curse of the Crimson Throne takes place. I mean, obviously, in your own campaigns, it can take place whenever. But we have to have some point of reference to say, you know, oh, did this happen before or after Curse of the Crimson Throne? And 4708 is the year that we attribute that to. So we went with that as the year because in world, that's the year that she would have. She didn't rule for 10 years unless your characters were very bad at that AP. So the year that she would put on her coins would be 4708. And so that's a level of detail that, you know, the campaign coin guys were like, oh, we'll put 2018 on it. And we were like, no, you won't. Because that was 2,000 years ago.
And we wanted to put, you know, at one point we were talking about, you know, putting PaizoCon 2018 or something. It was like, no. We want this to be an in-game coin.
Yeah, and collectors will remember where they got it.
Cool. All right, should we go on to the next one?
Sure. This one's cool.
And that should be available at Gen Con.
It should be available at Gen Con on the Corrosion Crown.
This is really cool.
So these are really neat. This company came to us, Destiny Coins, Macian Enterprises, and they have their own line of silver coins. These are pure silver, 999 silver. And they mint them. It's a fantasy line, some really cool stuff that they already do. And they said, hey, you know, we have a built-in customer base. We already make these, and we sell them easily. We'd love to do some Pathfinder coins. And so we thought, wow, that's really cool. So, like, actual silver coins. And these are the final sketches. This is actually what this coin is going to look like. The one on the left is, there's a technical term for it. I think that's called the obverse. No, the one on the left is the reverse. Okay, so he knows it better than I do. And the one on the right is the obverse. It's basically the front and back of the coin. So the dragon will remain consistent throughout the entire series. There will be six coins in the series, six different iconics. And as you can see from the sketch there, that's Valoros, and he's got a shield.
Yeah, so it's the new art for Valoros.
So that's the new art for Valoros.
Cool. I really like the way they incorporated the bottom of the coin. For the people listening, you can see they've got Valoros on one of them and Red Dragon on the other. That's taken from Wayne Reynolds' handwriting.
Yeah, it is exactly.
And so it's adapted from it, but it's interesting that they're taking not just sort of Wayne's visual direction, but also the text itself, which looks really cool.
They almost look like runes.
So the thing is, these are going to be pretty expensive, right?
They're relatively expensive.
Do we have a final price yet?
The Kickstarter just went up, so you can actually go find it on Kickstarter, and the base level that gets you a coin is $85.
Okay.
They are 2 ounces. Of silver, and I mean, when you hold a 2 ounce coin in your hand,
that weight. I mean, that feels like a lot of metal.
Yeah, they're really cool to have. They sent us an example so that we can pass it around, and I lock it in my desk because somebody's surely going to put that in their collection.
Yeah, but I don't have that one in the archive, Glenn.
You're
gonna need that.
We'll get archive copies of this one here when they come in.
Yeah, and their plan is to release them like 2 or 3 a year,
about,
I think?
Yeah, roughly 2 a year, assuming that everything goes out. Valorous should be available at Gen Con, possibly shortly thereafter. He's got to coordinate with the North American Mint, actually, in order to get them minted. So this is all high-end stuff. They're extremely high quality. When you see them in person, I mean, this doesn't look anywhere near as good, these images, black and white on the screen, as the actual coin does. The technique that they're going to use for these coins is what they call antique silver. So it's similar in a way to the campaign coin stuff, but they are not bright, shiny coins. They actually have depth to them that's caused by the antiquing process. And it's really remarkable how 3D they look when you see one in person. So I will be collecting all of these on my own because
yeah,
they're
just
super
addition
cool.
To just the fact that they are made from 2 ounces of silver, the sculpting quality on them also goes into that price point. That these really are art objects that you're not going to set a pile of these down at your table. These are something that you're going to collect and put on your wall, honestly,
yeah.
Or as you know, a desk.
And they actually come in an acrylic case, so it's already sealed when you get it. And then, depending on what level of the Kickstarter you want to go into, they have super fancy frames and boxes that they go in. And by the end of the series, I'm sure we'll have a display case with space for all 6. Or probably 7, because then you can show the dragon also at the end. And it's going to be a really impressive line once it's all done. And the only other character that we've made decisions on for sure is Sione will be the second one.
Yeah, but we haven't seen any sketches or anything.
Yeah, we don't have any
yet,
sketches for
but
that.
But that'll
one
be
yet.
The second one that they do.
Well, talking about Sione is a nice transition to our next slide.
I well, might have ordered the, yeah.
Here we go. Boom. What are we looking at here?
Yeah. These. So all of you are familiar with Dynamite Entertainment, I'm sure. They're the ones that do our Worldscape comics.
All of our comics.
They came to us and they said, hey, you know, we have this other line of things that we do. They're statues. They're, you know, 10 to 12 inches high. And we do superheroes, figures, stuff like that. And we would really like to do a Pathfinder statue. So we thought, well, this sounds really interesting. It's not something that we've ever done before, but we talked about it in the licensing meeting and decided that it sounded like a good idea. And we picked Sione to be the first one, and this is the final render. That's the final colored render. That is what the main statue is going to look like. Mark, can you tell me if they actually got the base? Maybe this isn't the final render.
that's the actual base.
Is that the correct rune?
It's got the maze, the open road. Yeah.
That's the kind of detail that Mark looks into on these. He checked all the runes on the base to make sure that they were appropriate for Sione. And the sculptor had originally put one on there that wasn't
it had
accurate.
The Sihedron on there for her, and I was like,
slide that through Mark.
And I was like, no, she's not Thessalonian. And they were like, what should we use instead? And I was like, use this rune. And they were like, all right.
This is Sione in her first edition costume.
Yes.
Sione's costume in second edition is significantly different. But we wanted to, no one had really seen that yet. So we wanted to give one last hurrah for...
And we have actually been working on this for a good 4 months. So,
at least, yeah. I mean,
at the time we started, I'm not sure that we even knew what Sione's new costume was going to look like. So that's the decision
to
go
with
the original.
Still don't know what it looks like in color. But it's very different. We've changed Sione a lot. She's still Sione, but
she's carrying more gear.
She has a lot more cloth on her in the new version.
Well, and more gear. I mean,
and more gear. I think this. The side view is a little less challenging in the new version.
Yep.
People are increasingly trying to cosplay our characters and things as well, so it's a tough cosplay to pull off. And the other thing that kind of frustrates me, as much as I love the original Sione design, you can see part of Sione's character in her background is that she has these magical tattoos on her legs and her arms. And although there's a lot in this costume where she's not covered, she's covered up where her cool magical tattoos are on her arms and stuff like that. So a lot more practical outfit in general for Sione, but her arms are bare in the new version. And that's so in the comic and in other areas where we're showing that sometimes those tattoos light up or whatever. You want people to be able to see what's kind of the part of the cool was part of Sioni. So this is a nice way to reflect kind of where that character has been, and let's see if it does well. Maybe we'll have a new Sioni statue down the road. But,
or a Mauriciel or a Valoros or who knows? I mean,
or whatever.
Yeah.
I've seen Dynamite statues that do very, very nice work. So this will be a Kickstarter, I believe. It's
Kickstarter.
Maybe with some other stuff as well. But that's going to be coming, I think, probably pretty soon.
They're just wrapping up a Kickstarter, or they just did wrap up one for, I think, a Sheena or Jungle Girl. Or a Deja Thoris, actually.
Yeah.
So Dynamite runs a few of these a year in terms of their sculpture Kickstarters. So I'm not sure when.
The last that we discussed with them was probably the August timeframe.
Yeah. So we'll have more information as the dates of the Kickstarter are more nailed down.
Yep. In the meantime, since we're talking about Dynamite, Crystal Frazier's Spiral of Bones series is on stands right now. It's nearing its way to its pulse-pounding conclusion, if it's not already stopped.
No, the third issue comes out like next week, I think.
Well, yeah. Of course it's not already stopped because I still have to write the final Starfighter backup.
Yeah. No, that's already out, Eric. You missed the boat.
Yes, thank God. I forgot about the to-do list. So the Spiral of Bones is a really great story. Crystal has taken over as the primary writer on this series, on this five-part series. And it's all about Valoros is dead. He gets killed, and he shows up in the boneyard, and they think he's someone else, and they try to hold him accountable for the sins of an ancient Thessalonian wizard, and it's a lot of crazy, like, legal hijinks
right.
in the afterworld.
Yeah.
Then Valoros comes back and is alive again, but has a passenger in his mind, and has to deal with that. Super fun. Crystal is a great writer. She's got a really good sense of character and dialogue, so I'm thrilled to have her on the comic. In the meantime, I am writing the backup feature for Starfinder in that comic, which is all about the Skittermanders and introducing the Skittermanders to people. They're friendly, multi-armed characters who just want
They're just
help.
Here to help.
They're just here to help. And sometimes they don't really... Overly
helpful. Yeah, basically Mr. Meeseeks,
with
agency of their own.
So that's been fun. We are also talking to Dynamite about other Starfinder projects, perhaps a standalone graphic novel, and that's in some discussions as well. And because Crystal did such a great job with Spiral of Bones, I've asked her to pitch the next series to Dynamite as well. I'm waiting to hear back from them. Can't really say what it is yet, but
I don't even know what it is.
It is similarly hilarious and awesome, and it ties up at least one. It doesn't tie up, but it involves a recurring villain.
Ooh.
Mark, can you guess what the recurring villain that is in this series is? Mr. Continuity Man?
Recurring from the comics?
Yep.
Or Fulgrim?
That's right. The only one who's lived. We've killed a lot of our villains. But the Veiled Master, Fulgrim from Jim Zub's City of Secrets arc, and who was in the framing device of the Mind Pathfinder Worldscape series. Big, fishy creature.
And has a lot of details actually given in the... plots of the Veiled Masters article in Pathfinder AP volume, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but it's in the Ruins of Aslant AP. There's an article that details those.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Moreland. let's make sure Crystal's read that article.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So you should loop me in on this
before
it gets approved by Dynamite.
That's so that hasn't been approved yet, but I think it will be. And so that's what's going on. I think I've got one more Pathfinder Worldscape story to tell to kind of wrap all that up. The next four issues of that are actually on their way to people who backed the Humble Bundle that we did a while back. It had that and it had some miniatures in it. Dynamite got the comics done a couple months ago. They've been sitting in our warehouse kind of waiting for the miniatures. Ninja Division unfortunately had some production delays on the miniatures, so we just decided to send everybody their comics first, and the miniatures will be sent out in early August, I think, is what it's looking like. But we didn't want people to have to wait that long to keep hold. They'd get the package in the first quarter of this year. That is now passed. So there's four issues that, if you ordered that, I'm sure they'll be available digitally as well on Comixology.
Yeah, the product pages are already up on Comixology and on Dynamite's own digital comic.
So that is site. Pathfinder crossed over with Deja Thoris by Chris Carey. So he wrote that one. He's a William S. Burroughs expert. He's an Edgar Rice Burroughs expert.
Right.
And so he wrote the John Carter's girlfriend thing. I wrote the Reanimator crossover. So I crossed over my Goblin character from the very first issue of Pathfinder Goblins with Herbert West, H.P. Lovecraft's
Reanimator.
Yeah. And that was pretty hilarious. And then what else did we do? We did
Swords of Sorrow,
which is a big, a lot of Dynamite's female warrior type characters were in a big crossover a couple years ago, so we brought the main character from that, which is an interstellar character called the Traveler, and we brought her into it because what's happening on the worldscape is having multiversal repercussions. And then lastly, we did Vampirella. So I had a chance to do a Vampirella story, which I did a very sort of 70s kind of Warren Publications Vampirella, just like old times sort of story. So that is setting up a giant conflict, basically a war for the worldscape that we'll come back to and tie up and finalize all those big crossover plots. And that's kind of what's going on with comics. So let's move on to the next slide. Hero Lab.
Oh, yeah. So Hero Lab, as you've all seen, they came out with Hero Lab Online, which is supporting Starfinder. They have a major announcement tomorrow. So this slide is just in there as a teaser.
So watch social media tomorrow.
Yeah. And are they making that announcement at the banquet?
I think it is in the slide presentation.
It is in the slide presentation.
Okay.
So for those of you who have been to the PaizoCon banquet before this year, we're trying to make the actual presentation a little bit shorter because it can tend to go on for some time. So a lot of our licensing partners have sent us images that we'll be putting up in a rotating slideshow that will run while people are getting food and setting up and things like that. So people can learn about it. And not just Hero Lab, but a lot of other fun stuff as well.
And we expect you all to remember that URL too.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
That's Hero Lab's actual Facebook.
I'm sure if you just go on Facebook and do a search for Hero Lab, you'll find it.
That's how I found
to remember that number.
All right. Next.
So this is the one that everybody, I'm sure, has already heard of, but Owlcat Games is doing Pathfinder Kingmaker. It's a isometric, how do you describe it? Isometric third-person...
I would call it an isometric party-based computer RPG set in the Pathfinder Fantasy.
Well done, Eric. That's a good job. we have betas for it, which are in the other room. You can actually go in and play it. We have four computers set up that you could play it on. It's also, you can play Pathfinder online on the same computers, but we've all been playing it because we've had the beta for a couple of months now. And
I was playing alpha, so yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Baldur's Gate or Neverwinter Nights or other
Fallout 2.
Any of those like party based turn based, this one's not completely turn based. They have
an interesting way of doing real time
spacebar pause. And honestly, that's the way that combat in Pathfinder works, that you just can't do at the table. You can't have everyone take their turn at the same time. But you can with a computer game. So the same 6 second round, everyone does their action during those 6 seconds instead of so-and-so moves and then someone does their thing and then they all do it at the same time. And you can pause it to give people orders or let the AI handle it. And yeah. And so far, the beta has been out to backers now for a month and a half. For the Kickstarter backers, and they are anticipating a full commercial release, they're saying now, by the end of the summer, so we'll see if they're onto that. I think that the beta includes the first four chapters of the AP, and they hit one of their Kickstarter backer goals to add a seventh chapter to the story. So they worked closely with us to sort of take the narrative beyond the conclusion of the printed AP. So even people who've played the original Kingmaker campaign will get something new out of this. They've added a whole lot of companion-based side quests. So there's 10 companions you can get to follow your baron or baroness around the Stolen Lands. Each one of those has, their own through line that goes across the chapters. Among those is Amiri. She's the one iconic that shows up in, at least as a playable character. There may be other iconics who make NPC appearances, but not sure. I have just been blown away by the quality of this game. I mean, they came to us, actually, was it at Gen Con 2 or 3 years ago, and said, hey, we want to show you something. And they basically ran a vertical slice of this game. And they were like, can we get a license? We're like, well, you've already done the work, so sure.
These are the kinds of licenses we like, you know, where they've already done all the work and all they have to do is rubber stamp it.
Yeah.
It's great.
This is more than just a rubber stamp. I mean, we worked very closely with them from a concept art standpoint and, vetted all of the new content that they're adding. They picked up on a bunch of themes in the AP that, due to just the restrictions of printed media, we weren't able to really expand in print, that they're really running with. Elements of like curses and interference from the eldest and things like that that are just not really present in the printed version. It's really exciting.
Our involvement in this one, as he says, has been so high that I think that of the amount of total work that I send towards Mark, this is probably half of it just on this.
Yeah,
this
I have a lot of it waiting for me that has come straight from them. I mean, basically, because we have final approval on everything, and the game has so many branching narrative and dialogue trees that there's no way anyone in the office would be able to play through the game and see all the options to approve them and say, yes, that's good to go. You can use our branding on that. So they have sent me all of the dialogue. There's like over a million lines of dialogue in the game that I have to read through and, you know, say, yeah, Amiri would, you know, wouldn't use that word, or that's sort of a, you know, anachronism, or, you know, their studio is based in Russia, so sometimes there's just colloquialisms or idioms that get lost in translation. That's...
We get the voice actors. We get their interviews and
their audition
tapes, and Mark goes through and edits those and makes recommendations to the
actors. And I'll be like, oh, this accent is sort of racist. Can you use a different one? You know, things like that. but ultimately, like, that's my job, to make sure that the brand is reflected well. And, you know, and so sometimes it's like, oh, and this is the voice of this character. And I'm like, oh, our idea for him was always more like the Cheshire Cat. And they're like, oh, we hadn't even considered that. And then they go back to the voice artist or the voice actor and have him redo this character. And, you know, so the back and forth has been really great with them. And so, I'm super excited for the game. And for a while, I was playing it at my desk, which was awesome, and now I'm just too busy to do that. So, unfortunately, I don't get to claim to work at a game company and actually play games all day, because that...
All right, let's move on.
That's our story anyway, we're sticking to it.
Yeah.
This is the final slide.
Final slide. So, you guys all know Q Workshop. They have a booth in store. So one of the things that you can get from them this weekend, I've just pulled two dice out of my pocket, these are the bonus dice. The D20, the light colored one here, is the one that you see on the screen. This is for the Pathfinder playtest, and the other one is the Starfinder die. The Pathfinder playtest uses the Golem as the 20, and the Starfinder die uses the Pact Worlds Alliance symbol. After we'd made these and I'd seen the original drafts of it, I said, Mateus, this Pathfinder playtest die looks amazing. This is really easy to read. It really captures the colors and everything that you'll see in your rule book when you get it. Could you make a whole set out of it? And he said, sure. So that's what we have. Q Workshop's going to be doing a full set of dice just for the Pathfinder playtest.
Right.
And that will be available at Gen Con.
Hey, Glenn.
Yes, sir.
Does the Paizo Golem on the D20 have the Starburst in the center or not?
They're each different, and it's because the different sizes only allow certain things.
So small. Okay.
Right? If you look at the D6, you'll see that not only he has the Starburst, but he has hands.
But why are the 5 and the 6 adjacent to one another on the D6? They're supposed to be on opposite sides.
No, the 6 and the 1, the 5 and the 2, and the 3 and the 4.
I'm thinking of 6-sided.
No, I was thinking that they don't have the adjacent numbers next to them, but that's not accurate. So.
Yeah.
Never mind. Clearly, they know more about making dice than I do.
What else? Is there anything that we've overlooked or that we should discuss?
One more thing about the Owlcat game. I believe tomorrow is the deadline for pre-ordering the game.
Oh.
Their Kickstarter wrapped last year, but they have kept open their pre-order
crowdfunding.
So they have been counting all pre-orders since then to determine stretch goals. And they actually just hit another one to play Azamars like a month ago. And there was a poll on what other race would be added, and Azamar won. So if you want to get either any of the special add-ons or things like that along with your pre-order as if you had backed the Kickstarter, tomorrow is that deadline.
It is tomorrow, it's not today.
They're in Russia, so I'm not sure what the exact.
It's the end of the week, which could either be today, Friday, or tomorrow, Saturday. So you might want to check.
Yeah. Oh, no. Today is Friday, isn't it? I keep thinking today is Thursday. But that's Gen Con that runs 4 days from Thursday to Sunday, not. Okay. Yeah. It's probably today. So if you want the game,
you can get a physical copy that way. They also did a really nice, you can see on their website, but they did a really nice map on cloth.
Mm-hmm.
But that the only way to get that is to pre-order, so you need to go do that.
Wayne Reynolds poster, is that the thing?
Yes, I believe it is.
Because we just got the art for that.
Oh my god.
It is one of the best Wayne Reynolds pieces I've ever seen.
We should have shown that art.
I got it right there.
Eric has the master computer.
Hold on, no, I'm going to unplug so people don't see all my other stuff.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other licenses. So the main one that I and Eric already spoke of, but that I've spent a lot of time on is the Pathfinder Battles. And we just announced at the beginning of the month that our next set would be a Kingmaker themed set. That is a 45 miniature set. The case incentives for that, which are larger, more complex minis that you can purchase. Non-randomly if you buy a case. A lot of retailers will just put them on sale at their store. Those are a huge earth elemental and a huge water elemental based on the art for the mythic versions of each of those from Mythic Adventures.
Mark, you're being on stage.
Oh, thanks.
So as the heroes fighting the Jabberwock.
Yeah.
You can see Amiri's right here.
That's the
characters. Companions from the game, and then this is the Jabberwock.
Yeah.
Is that the poster or is that the cover of the physical box? That's the cover of the physical box.
Yeah. I think the poster will probably just be half of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Wayne knocked this one out of the park. I mean, they...
Anything else on my computer you guys want to see? What's that?
Rather than here.
That's clear.
So the Kingmaker set, and that'll be coming out in October, and we are just in the process of approving the paint masters for those. We've seen, I think, everything. Through. Yeah,
we've seen them all once. Some of them went back for revisions.
So, so that's well coming along, and we are well into the planning and coordination of not only the next set, but the one after that. So we're almost a year out in terms of our work with WizKids on planning future sets.
And the special subset for this fall, which I don't think is...
We haven't...
Yeah.
We
haven't talked about exactly what that is yet. But
yeah, we do have... We will at... I believe they're still aiming for Gen Con, have a special six-figure non-randomized set that will be the playtest heroes. So that that'll be similar in presentation to the Iconic Heroes sets that you can see in the store that we've released for all of our existing Iconics. And that's going to include Sioni, Mauriciel, Valoros, Kira, and Harse, and Fumbus.
Fumbus, the Goblin Alchemist.
The Goblin Alchemist, whose name I don't know if we've said outside of playtests. Yeah, okay. and so those are all the characters who appear in, you know, the cover art, the existing art that we have for the Pathfinder playtest. So they will have those figures available, and that'll be Valoros with his shield and Harse with his axes.
Probably going to be September, October. I don't think that one's going to make Gen Con.
Oh, did they say it won't? Okay. In any case,
it's still being decided.
Yeah, the goal is to get those into people's hands as early in the playtest process as possible, so when people are playing through Doomsday Dawn, they have, you know, these minis to represent their new, more clothed Sioni.
All right, at that, I think we are kind of reaching near to the end of the program. Do you guys have any questions, or is there anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to hear about? Yeah.
What's your sort of minimum threshold for finding a name for one franchise?
We look for established companies who have good reputations, a solid business plan, a solid marketing plan, and are able to put up some money to start with.
And who can deal with the scale that we expect them to do.
Quality.
If someone comes to us and is like, I want to make, you know, hoodies, and they're like, I can make six a month, that's not going to, you know, like, we're not going to work with someone who's on an Etsy scale. But if someone can say, hey, I can produce thousands of these, then that'll meet our needs. Because the last thing we want to do is say we have a partner, and then it's just backordered all the time because they can't keep up with the demand.
The main stumbling block for most potential licensees is that we do ask for an advance against the royalties that will be paid, because Mark, specifically, is going to have a lot of work to do in order to validate what it is that you're trying to do. So we need to have that taken care of, because we can't afford to, you know, provide all this support for a whole bunch of licensees that aren't going to be successful. So we're trying to establish that you do have a solid company, you do have a good business plan, you know what you're doing, you can produce, as Mark said, in the volumes that we need, and that you can cover the fact that Mark and I have work to do.
Yeah. Yes, please keep me paid.
Question here in the middle.
How much of this stuff that you need to vet is already available online? Like, I know if I dig around on Paizo's site, I can find the biography for Valoros and Gravis. But, you know, I probably can't figure out which Iconics are allergic to peanuts.
Mark knows. He can tell you.
Right.
You know what? As of now, it's just Mauriciel. She's the only one. Just because it'll annoy James for her to not be able to eat peanut butter. I mean, that's largely my job is to know what we've said and where we've said it.
I guess, are you the single point of failure? Are you the person?
I am certainly a point of failure, that's for sure.
Eric is his backup.
Yeah, I mean,
Eric doesn't know it, but he's... Yeah,
yeah, I mean, we...
So here's something I just pulled out of my bag, I'll just show you. This is something I've been working on for years, and this is just a continuity Bible for the city of Absalom. It's got every single proper noun that's ever been associated with the setting.
Well, up until 2011.
In those sources.
Yeah.
So I'm going through it, and I just changed the formatting to make it easier to travel with, but that thing was a 54-page document. So we've got little things like
we have internal continuity tools that we use. I'm in the process of trying to set up RealmWorks database. Mm-hmm. That is really designed more for use at the table as a GM. So I'm still not sure it's the right fit for what I need, which is really a continuity database. But that's part of my job is to help manage that. For years, I've been doing that primarily on Pathfinder Wiki, which is a fan-run, fan-staffed database online. We can't include a lot of anything that has never seen print. So, like, if we know something about Valoros' backstory that we want to make sure makes it into canon eventually, or that we don't contradict. The wiki doesn't serve that purpose. There's a lot of juggling of our own internal continuity and continuity with 10 years worth of products, new content that licensees might make. Use Valoros as an example. I mean, he's front and center of the Spiral of Bones comics. So there's stuff in there, like the fact that, like, we learn about his family of origin. So, like, there's flashback scenes in there where you see his parents. It's hinted at that he is dyslexic. Because in one of them, his grandmother is teaching him to read, and he's like, the letters jiggle. You know, that's a detail that we're never going to probably put in a...
He got his longsword on a mission for the Aspis Consortium.
Exactly, yeah.
Little things, little throwaway things.
Yeah, like just that. Little things like that, you know, that it's important that we know and that we track, but it's not necessarily something that everyone needs to know at their table. So, that's one of the reasons that I look at everything that goes through, is because I can, even if I don't know off the top of my head which Iconics are allergic to peanuts, I can say, you know what, there was that scene where the Iconics were talking about their food allergies in that comic 5 years ago, and then go back and check and see who's allergic to what.
There's other things that go into it. In addition to all of the knowledge that we have that has maybe never been published, a licensee almost never wants to publish something verbatim. They usually want to put a little bit of their own spin on it.
Unless it's like a digital tabletop or something where they're really just translating our books into a different medium.
But a significant part of what Mark and I do is to make sure that whatever spin that they've put on it is appropriate within the Pathfinder universe. Right. Even as something as simple as, you know, this die, we went back and forth several times just selecting the tan color of the dye and the dark green color of the ink. Because, you know, we wanted to get something that meant something for the Pathfinder playtest. Right. And
Sarah Robinson ended up sending them files and said, hey, use this color palette. Pick them from these colors. And so that's why it's going to match those colors.
We've probably got time for one more question.
So you mentioned you have your style guide and it's fairly large and detailed now. Have you ever considered publishing that as an art book?
I have, yeah. It's not worth doing right now, but once we've got all the stuff painted,
of course.
I think people might be interested in that. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, or it could be, yeah, there's a number of ways we can get that content, but sure. Because it's real, real cool.
We've been showing off a lot of it on the blogs, the preview blogs for the Pathfinder playtest. Those are the sketches that Wayne did that, you know, that's art that appears in the playtest document and that we hope he paints and that we can put in future books.
Yep. All right, guys, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the seminar. There are plenty more where that came from, and we'll see you back later in the month.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KD Con team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.